Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed your lunch slash shopping break. If you can turn off your cell phones so they don't disturb the presenters, that would be great. I'm Danielle, I'm your moderator this afternoon, and we are going to hear about innovations in community partnerships. And all of the presenters have examples of state and local health departments working with communities to improve public health. So each presenter is going to speak for 15 minutes, and then we'll have a question and answer session at the end for all of the presenters, so please hold your questions till then. Our first presenter is Monica Wendell. She's the Associate Director of the Center for Community Health Development at the Texas A&M School of Rural Public Health, one of the 33 CDC Prevention Research Centers. Ms. Wendell and the staff at the center have been working with several communities for the past 7 years and have had success in improving access to care for rural residents. Her presentation today will cover one of those successful strategies for working with the uninsured. Ms. Wendell.
Thank you. Before I get started, I'd like to acknowledge a couple of my co-authors that are present in the audience, Angie Alanis and Laura Winwahan in the back, Dr. James Burdine over in the corner, and Shantae Sackett here, and several other of our co-authors could not be here. But we really were excited about being able to share with you something that is relatively a recent development in the state of Texas, and particularly where we are in the Brazos Valley, that is developing some strategies for health coverage for the working uninsured. If you're not from Texas, you're probably thankful for Texas in the same way that, and I apologize if this is offensive to anyone else from the South, that we're thankful for other states like Arkansas and Mississippi because we fall at the bottom of the ranking for health insurance. Texas actually leads the nation in uninsured. 25.1%, or a quarter of our population, was uninsured in 2004, and that's actually on the rise. You see the national average is right about 15%, which is also on the rise. Texas is also highest in the percentage of uninsured adults, the number of working adults, and the number of uninsured children. And with the number of programs that you've seen that have been changed by different policies, things like Medicaid, SCHIP, or CHIP as it is in our state, that have tried to cover the uninsured, even with those programs, Texas still remains with a really large gap in accessibility of health care for a large part of our population. Uncompensated care in Texas hospitals has increased to $7.7 billion in 2003, just from $3 billion a decade before. So it's more than doubled just in 10 years. The uninsured in the state of Texas actually it's a really interesting phenomenon, and I'm sure that it's probably similar to what other states are experiencing. The perception, at least among a lot of the leaders with whom we work, is that the uninsured are poor. They're uninsured because they don't have a job. They're uninsured because they, for whatever reason, are uninsurable. And really, in the state of Texas, a lot of the uninsured are self-employed. They're people that own their own business. Or they're employees of small businesses that can't afford to cover carry insurance for their employees. Most of them are legal residents, and we have a lot of leaders, particularly in our community, that think the uninsured must be undocumented residents, but that's not the case. A lot of them are workers in industries that traditionally don't carry insurance: construction, manufacturing, wholesale, retail. And astonishingly to us, in a recent assessment, we found that 71% of our uninsured are employed either part-time or full-time, which actually gives us a really good foundation for the strategy that I'm about to tell you about. For us, the consequences of uninsured, if you work in this arena, these are not unfamiliar to you. Typically, the uninsured receive care later, which means poor health outcomes, poor quality of life. They're less likely to receive preventive care because if they have to take off work, they have to pay out of pocket. Those are things that generally they're not willing to do until the condition that they have becomes acute and they have to go. And when they go, they typically will go to a source of care that may not be the most effective efficient, that may not be the most cost effective. And so what you see is a lot of utilization in the emergency room for conditions that either could have been prevented or could have been managed a lot earlier in the process. And this becomes a cycle of increasing the cost of care and leading to poor health outcomes and quality of life. So you see how this cycle works. The uninsured can't pay for their medical care. They still have to receive care when they need it, and so those expenses are passed along through higher premiums. You know, I think if you listen to the national debate around health care at this point, which really to me has not changed in the past 10 years, we're still talking about the overburdened healthcare system. We're still talking about the rising cost of care. We're still talking about gaps in the safety net. And those gaps, I think, continue to increase as the cost of care continues to increase. So when we talk about addressing this problem of the uninsured, I think one of the things that Texas has started to realize is that there has to be some shared responsibility, both for the problem and for solutions to try to address the problem. In the last legislative session, the state of Texas is on a biennial legislative agenda, and so our legislature meets every 2 years. So whatever they decide in one legislative session, we're stuck with for 2 years, which can be good and sometimes it can be bad because the appropriations also follow that. They're made in 1 year and they go for the next two. In our last legislative session, which was 2007, the issue of the uninsured, of course, was on the agenda, and they started talking about how complex the problem was and what were different strategies that were being tried across the country to try to address the problem of the uninsured. And one of the models that came to the forefront was the multi-share health coverage model. Some of you may be familiar with it through Access Health in Muskegon, Michigan. They were the first, they pioneered the model, and several communities across the country have since adapted it, developed it to be fitting for their own community. And that was one of the ideas, I think, that the state of Texas kind of had as they discussed how to deal with the uninsured during that legislative session. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our community and then how the legislative session played out into the program that we have in development right now. The Brazos Valley is the community where we are. It is a, and I will use air quotes, it's an urban, it's not, it's semi-urban hub. It's where Texas A&M University is. And then there are six rural counties completely surrounding Brazos County. And the way that the resources look in that community is 90% of the health resources are in the hub and 10% are out in the rural areas. But the population split is 60-40. And so while there's 40% of the population in the rural areas, only 10% of the resources are there, which causes, as you can imagine, a lot of disparities in access and in outcomes for those rural populations. In 2006, the Center for Community Health Development, in partnership with the Brazos Valley Health Partnership, which is a local group of health and human service providers, business leaders, elected officials, got together and conducted a comprehensive regional health status assessment of the entire seven-county region. That assessment included a population health survey, community discussion groups, key informant interviews, and a pretty thorough analysis of secondary data that existed for the seven-county region. And the findings of that assessment basically identified five key themes or key issues within the seven-county region. Not surprising. Transportation came out as number one, particularly for the rural nature of the community. Transportation is an issue because a good portion of the community has to travel 100 miles just to get to the nearest place for care. Mental health and access to mental health services was a primary concern. In a community of over 200,000 in the region, there are three psychiatrists. And so if that gives you any idea what services look like for people with mental health concerns. Access to specialty care is a big issue. Obesity is a big issue. It's relatively on par across the region with the country, which is still pretty alarming. About 2/3 of the population is either overweight or obese. But in some of our communities, the rate is up to 75%. And that is a primary concern given the chronic diseases that tend to follow. And then disparities among our rural and minority populations came out as one of the key priorities of the community that they wanted to address. well, all these issues really started pointing us back to access, that access was really one of the primary issues because people weren't being able to get to the services they needed. So transportation was an access issue. Getting to providers was an access issue. Those access issues were causing disparities in health outcomes and health conditions for rural and minority populations. So in response to this, in early 2007, as the Texas legislature was beginning to consider what they were going to do to tackle the problem of the uninsured in Texas, our local United Way put a committee together to talk about how we could address this issue and really brought back coverage for the working uninsured to the table. And there were several opportunities that we were hearing about through the legislature that might come to fruition. And so given this, the United Way formed a task group to assess the feasibility of a multi-share program. And I'll tell you a little bit about more about how multi-share works in just a second. And so this multi-share feasibility study task group was assembled, and it was assembled with representatives from a lot of different sectors that would be considered key stakeholders in the way that this model played out. So what the feasibility study task group did was a lot of research, and we had several grad students do really just a Herculean amount of research on what other communities were doing. And what they were able to identify was 26 communities all across the country that had tried some aspect of coverage for the working uninsured that seemed to fit in with different components of a multi-share strategy. We wanted to see who's done what, what's worked, what's failed. When it worked, why did it work? When it failed, why did it fail? So we didn't make the same mistakes that other communities had made and kind of skip that step if we could help it. And so we conducted surveys through the chambers of commerce across the seven counties, targeting small employers and their employees. And the surveys really asked, are you interested in providing health coverage to your employees? What services do you think would be the most important? How much would you be willing to pay? So the data were collected and analyzed. Report was issued in August, just this past August. And the findings of the study weren't surprising. What we found was that the multi-share model was only feasible on a regional scale, meaning we didn't have enough people that met the eligibility requirements in any one of the counties, that we really would have to launch it in all seven counties simultaneously. The overall cost of the premium, based on what the employers and employees told us, had to be at approximately $250 a month combined, and that the priority services included outpatient, prescription, and inpatient coverage, which isn't surprising to anybody. The way that the multi-share model works is that it divides the cost of healthcare equally among the employer, the employee, and another source or other sources. Those sources may be philanthropic, they may be public. Different communities have done it in a lot of different ways, and so we kind of weren't locked in to any one idea of what that would look like. And honestly, that was one of the ways to dodge the politics of it up front, because we didn't have an identified third share. So the advantages of this kind of a model is that it's run by a not-for-profit, and so there's no profit motive. It lowers the overhead. It lowers the pressure to have it make money so much as just the pressure to break even to keep the thing going. It reduces employer and employee costs, which allows for more small businesses to be able to participate, which is what we want. The disadvantages is it's limited. It is not insurance. It's coverage, and that coverage has to be really well defined, and it only covers a small percent of the total uninsured in the community. This graphic just displays kind of where we are in the process. It has a little flow model of what we were going to be doing, and the part that's highlighted is actually where we are now. So we've conducted the feasibility study and established a local advisory board, and right now we're working on developing work groups to actually develop the way that the program's going to work. We have an actuarial service that is putting together program models with costs. We have some developing policies and infrastructure, and some working on the provider network, and eventually it will go out to the communities for focus groups, and then it will go live. We're actually working with other communities in the state of Texas. As I mentioned, the legislature was kind of considering what was going to happen, and in Senate Bill 10 of the Texas legislature in 2007, they passed pilot funding for communities to pilot test innovative coverage strategies for the working uninsured, having multi-share in mind. And Houston, Dallas, Austin, Galveston, and El Paso went in together for the funding. And Brazos Valley actually had seen the announcement and decided, because we already had this feasibility study in the works, that we would apply, and they weren't expecting that. And so we actually kind of came in out of left field, but they were really excited about it because we were the only rural community that was trying to do this. Galveston went live last year, and even amidst the kind of wreckage of Hurricane Ike, they're still up and running. Houston and Austin are set to go live in the early part of next year, and so we're learning a lot from what they're doing. The challenges for us in a rural community with a lot less population than what the big cities are doing, obviously risk pooling. We don't want only the highest risk population to enroll in the coverage. We want to be able to distribute the risk so that we can lower the cost. Competition with existing insurance plans. We don't want insurers to view us as coming in and taking away their business. That's not a good way to run a community program. Startup costs and sustainability, obviously. Changing policies at the state and federal levels. Texas legislature is about to go into session again, and we have no idea what they're going to do related to the things that will affect the way that this multi-share plan works out. And one of the challenges really is getting people to acknowledge that this is only part of the solution. When you have something innovative like this in a community, they want to just latch onto it and say, this is going to solve the problem of the working uninsured, when in fact, you know, we're going to do good to make a dent in it. And yes, you know, it's an innovative program, and it is viable, and we think that it'll make a difference, but it's only a really small piece of the solution. Real quick before I finish, just to let you know kind of what we're planning for sustainability. The popular option that everybody keeps pushing us towards is ask the state for more money, but that's not very realistic. And so the options that we're considering are keeping costs down and risk distributed and doing everything we can to build those into the system. Maintaining strong community support from all the stakeholder sectors. And we do view all the stakeholders as important partners in this process as we go forward to make sure that this is a kind of sustainable, viable program to continue. Thank you.
And that was a terrific example of staying on time. Our next presenter is Kathy Cunningham, and she is the Senior Program Manager for Dietitian for the